You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Babylon 5 ended a great war and united 100 alien races in peace. Danger didn't die. It just went underground with new heroes and new evils to carry the torch.
We need to make sure they all understand we will not be intimidated.
What is wrong with you people?
We have to set him against himself.
It's an entire new season of Babylon 5 with all new episodes.
And so it begins.
There is a hole in your mind.
What do you want?
No one here is exactly what he appears.
Nothing's the same anymore.
Commander Sinclair is being reassigned.
Why don't you eliminate the entire non-homeworld?
I see a great hand reaching out of the sky.
Who are you?
President Clark has signed a decree today declaring
martial
law.
These orders have forced us to declare independence.
I saw people get off their encounter-suited butts and do something.
You are the one who watches.
To Zahadu, who will die.
Why are you here? Do you have anything worth living for?
Think of my beautiful city. Right?
Giants in the playground.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy!
We are here to place President Clark under arrest.
Turn around. Very, very slowly.
Hello, Mr. Garibaldi. Good to see you again. I was wondering how you were doing. You haven't written or called.
Shut up.
Obviously haven't improved your manners.
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic, Babylon 5. This week, Season 5, Episode 10, Phoenix Rising. I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
And the synopsis. The standoff between the telepaths, the Alliance, and the Psi-Corps ends in blood and tragedy. Oh, I thought tragedy was the last episode. And Garibaldi confronts his nemesis. Written by JMS and directed by David J. Eagle, this episode was released on April 1st, 1998. No fool. And takes place on June the 19th, 2262. And the guest stars are Jack Hannibal as Peter, Victor Love as Telepath, Lee McCloskey as Thomas, and Walter Koenig as Alfred Bester. Uncredited are Christina Gavin as Telepath. In fact, uncredited is Christina Gavin as Telepath. So, guys, what did we think of this episode?
Well, I thought that Victor Love had a great name. And if you look at his picture in IMDb, it's a sexy looking man. I'll tell you what. That just made me laugh when I was doing the research. But yeah, Victor Love. Anyways, we finally get the conclusion to the telepath war.
Somebody get Sean a glass of water.
Yeah, cool me down, I'll tell you. But anyway, yeah, the telepath war, it comes to an exciting conclusion, which pretty much took half of season five, and it was just so awful and hard to watch, and the fact that it's over is so gratifying because it's a slog and Babylon 5 is so much better than this. Yeah, I don't know. We'll talk about it, but I'm just happy it's over. Dan always has more insightful things to say than I do, so take it away, Dan.
You see, I was about to have something insightful, I thought, but maybe I'm just checking out Victor Love now on IMDb.
And so am I.
I'm falling in love with Victor Love. Oh my god, yeah. Man, yeah, he aged well, man. Didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Lucky so-and-so. Yeah, can we just talk about Victor Love? Just forget
sure.
the episode.
Yes.
It's fine. God, I mean, even when we were at the point of Byron holding the gun at the explosive oil, we still had 5 minutes of dialogue of him explaining that she had to step away, that Lita had to move away. Right. Like, we all knew what was coming.
Yeah.
Why didn't nobody shoot him?
Nobody said anything when he had the gun in his hand. He picked it up and nobody said anything.
No one just thought, oh, let's take this opportunity to take him down. He's the leader of this radical terrorist group who have blackmailed the entire intergalactic alliance. They've walled themselves in. They have murdered people. They have done loads of stuff to then have a ton of enemies across the station. Not one of them thinks, I'll take it. I will take a discommendation and just shoot him right now because he's got a gun pointed at the flammable liquid. I wonder what he's going to do next. Oh, my God. Just, I mean, the point in the episode where there was cutlery all but being flung at Zachary, fantastic. Just made me laugh out loud. I could almost see the strings of all the things being thrown at them and dangled around. Oh, look, the telepaths are throwing forks at us. Oh my God, it was so, you could see the telepath stalking them in the back of the corridor and they didn't take the opportunity to shoot. You could see them moving like their shadows going along. You got the shot. You were like 10 paces away. Don't get any closer. They're not wearing their paintball gear from season one. They're completely exposed. Just shoot them. Just boring. Oh, and Garrett. Apart from Garibaldi, I enjoyed that bit, but that's about it.
Yeah, that was about the only good part.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, all I can say is, hooray, the end.
Yeah, big time.
Now we can get on with some real stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Finally they go, and then I like the way everybody's shooting, then suddenly there's flammable liquid on the floor. Everybody stop. Right. And then he gets his gun out. He says, right, it's obvious what he's going to do. He's going to shoot explode everything. Well, hang on. That's going to take everybody out. So, a bullet through the head would do it. It's not going anywhere near the floor or the flammable liquid. Just, I don't know. Throw the gun at him, anything. Just, stop him. Couldn't Lita jump into his head and say, no, I can't let you do this. Whatever, anything, I don't know. Couldn't Peter have gone, ooh, I'll take the gun out of his hand telepathically. Ooh. No.
What?
They can only do forks. That's it. They can't do guns.
And what did Lita see in Byron? They have no chemistry. He's got no personality. Nobody listens to the guy. All his people are rogue telepaths, and they go off and do whatever the hell they want. And then they just got the silent crew walled up behind the metal grates, like, not a very good cult leader.
Yeah, but the sex. I mean, you could see babies and all sorts.
And the singing.
The singing. Oh, that was just everything. I mean, you know what women like? They like a lot of candles, make it look romantic, and having sex, thinking about babies and things. Yeah, it's in jars and what have you. It's just so romantic. I mean, and the hair. I mean, is long flowing. Sherlock, Robin Hood, Sherwood Forest hair, it's amazing. Anyway, let's get into the review.
A few words for those who've just arrived. A colony of rogue telepaths have been unwisely allowed to take up residence here. Since they're all humans, they fall under the jurisdiction of Earth law. And the Alliance has agreed to respect the rights of each member world to control its own people. This leaves it to us. The rogues have engaged in unauthorized scans of several dozen ambassadors.
They are now in two groups.
They've extracted an unknown amount of privileged information, intending to exchange those secrets for a home world of their own. Since then, they've divided into two groups. Half of them are now holed up in down below. They have reportedly begun a hunger strike, which they believe will create sympathy for their cause. This is all fine by me, since it means that Group One is already contained, saving us the trouble. Also, the longer they continue their hunger strike, the weaker their condition becomes, the less resistance we'll encounter when we go in after them.
And half are scattered through the station. The Bloodhound units are already on their tail.
Group number two is our main concern. Group two, the rest of Byron's followers, have scattered throughout the station. Several Bloodhound units are already on patrol, running them to ground. Several of them broke into an armory last night, seizing an unknown number of PPG rifles and handguns. We believe only a small portion of them are armed. Fortunately, there seems to be little tactical coordination between the members of Group 2. This should make them easier to bring down.
Lockley says that Bester enjoys the drama and the chase, to which he says he enjoys being good at what he does. And it's for her benefit. Their job is to protect normals from rogue telepaths.
Our job is to protect normals from rogue telepaths. Perhaps now you'll understand why we're necessary. Every race to develop telepaths has had to find some way to control them. Through laws, religion, drugs, or extermination. We may not be pretty. But we're a hell of a lot better than the alternatives.
If they behave like mad dogs, they will have to treat them like mad dogs. That way always works.
Maybe so. But I don't have to like your methods. We shouldn't be run down like mad dogs.
If they insist on behaving like mad dogs, we have to treat them as such. Look, Captain, you called me, remember? Now that we're here, we'll handle it our way. And our way always works. Because whatever our differences, those rogues aren't telepaths. And that puts us on the same side. We just have to help them understand that.
Just then, the elevator doors open and they find a man crucified to the wall with the words "Free Byron" painted above him. That was pretty nasty.
Yeah, I wonder who could have done that.
Yeah, that'll get you a home world every time.
But also, he chose to wall himself up. Like, Free Byron, he chose to isolate himself and weld all those panels yes. into there. That was his order. Like, how are you not...
Free Byron, let him out. Let him out. We're trying. We're welding him. No, don't let me out. Ooh, keep the doors. There's a bomb behind the door.
Byron's let him just out. Behind all the welded panels. Like,
I chose to be here. Yes. You've got the wrong message.
Get him out.
I don't want to come out. I'd like to stay in the box, please.
Oh. No, it's wrong.
We'll be in a better place. Can I come out now? The candles are burning the oxygen. Hello?
Well, this review has devolved into something not.
Byron contacts Sheridan, who hopes they might be able to negotiate their way out of this situation. Sheridan says that he has given Byron a place to stay, and now the situation has got out of hand and people are starting to die at the hands of Byron's telepaths. Byron says he can help the situation, but they need to get rid of the Psi-Corps first. Sheridan says he can't do that. Byron believes he can get the terrorist telepaths to back off if they can talk to them, but they will be arrested if they leave their sanctuary. Bester comes in and says they should not believe Byron as he never keeps his promises, and tells him if Byron stays there, they will dig them out, and if they come out, they will arrest them. Byron says that there are other ways. Leta asks Byron what he meant by not keeping his promises. He says...
Hey, later.
Later, Leta. Bester gives Sheridan an updated report and says this situation will now be over by morning. Sheridan asks Lockley if she has seen Garibaldi since Bester has arrived. She says she has not. To which Sheridan says, there is only one thing worse than Mr. Garibaldi being loud. It's Mr. Garibaldi being dead silent. Bester gets to his quarters where he meets Mr. Garibaldi.
Turn around. Very, very slowly.
Hello, Mr. Garibaldi. Good to see you again. I was wondering how you were doing. You haven't written, you haven't called.
Shut up.
Obviously haven't improved your manners.
I want you to go over to the Babcom unit. Hit the record button.
Standing by to record. Touch record a second time to initiate recording.
He tells Bester to hit the record button and admit to what he did to Garibaldi when he conditioned him to turn against Sheridan.
Now, I want you to dictate a full confession. I want you to tell the whole truth about what you did to me and to Sheridan.
What I did? Oh, you mean the part about my conditioning you to turn against your friends, sell out Sheridan to President Clark, and infiltrate a conspiracy against my beloved Psi-Corps?
Yeah, that's the one. Now hit the button and say it again.
No.
This isn't a discussion, Bester.
Yes, it is.
He has thought about this for a long time.
You won't shoot.
Don't count on it. If anybody asks, I'll just say it was self-defense. And there's nobody who loves you enough to even question it. See, the truth is, I don't care if I go up for your murder or not. Not after what you did to me. I've thought about this for a long, long time, Bester. And either you do what I say right now, or I'll kill you. I mean it.
Yes. I believe you do.
He tries to shoot Bester, but he can't.
But my answer is still no. So, I guess you're just going to have to shoot me.
Bester asks him a philosophical question.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how stupid do you think I am, anyway? Do you really think I'd let you run around, knowing what you know, and leave you free to kill me?
What have you done to me?
I hit you with an Asimov. He was a writer long ago who wrote stories about robots. He came up with a set of rules to prevent them from turning against mankind.
He tells him about the Three Laws of Robotics by Isaac Asimov.
The cybertechs adopted them in the early pre-ban experiments, and I found them useful myself from time to time. Before we finished adjusting you, I made sure we planted Asimov's two most important rules in your mind. You cannot harm me directly, or through inaction, allow harm to come to me.
I thought you'd like that part.
It was good.
To make it harder for someone else to break the conditioning, I put the block in the part of your brain that controls the neural system. You can want to kill me as much as you want. Same way I can say, I want to raise this hand. But it won't lift up until I send the impulse.
He has blocked him from attacking Bester, but has not blocked the rage he feels.
You're blocked at the point of action. But I left your rage intact. Call it counterpoint. Dramatic irony.
Well,
I'd love to stay and chat, Mr. Garibaldi, but I just have so much work to do. Oh, be sure and turn out the lights on your way out.
You know what I wondered at this point? Why didn't Garibaldi have like a small camera with a microphone on him as well, so that when Bester didn't hit the record button and still admitted it, he still had the stuff? Like, it's the future. They have small recording stuff.
Byron is still upset that he can't change the minds of the telepaths. Lita asks him about Bester saying he can't keep his promises. Byron says it's personal, and you should not ask questions that will lead to answers you do not want to hear. She says she wants to hear the answer.
I grew up in the Psi-Corps, same as you. Do you know my rating as a telepath? I'm a strong P-12.
But all P-12s are automatically designated Psy-Cops. You were a Psy-Cop?
Not just a Psy-Cop. Bester's protege. He was training me to be just like him. And I was. For a long time.
Byron tells Lita about an operation that he was part of.
It was supposed to be a simple interception. We gotten word about a covert operation smuggling telepaths into some of the outer colonies, where it would be harder for us to find them. We surrounded the transport and demanded they turn over the telepaths, or we would use deadly force. They did as they were told. They didn't have much choice.
Omega 7 to Omega 1. Blips are clear. Capture transport moving into position.
he was told to fire on the ships.
All clear. We can head back now.
Not yet, Omega-7. We got this batch, but there'll be others. We need to send a message.
All right. I'll arrange for them to be escorted to...
Negative, Omega-7. Lock all forward weapons on transport. Prepare to fire.
Sir, they're unarmed. We can't just...
Prepare to fire, Omega-7.
I can't.
I gave you an order, Byron. Execute the order or face the consequences.
When he got back, he tried to file a report on what happened.
They're just mundanes, Byron. And it's them or you. You wanted to run with the big boys? Now you have to show that you're up to it. Are you? Are you up to it, Byron?
I knew he was serious. Knew he wanted me blooded, just like him. I knew they would kill me if I didn't do as I was told. So, God help me, I pulled the trigger. After all, they were just mundanes.
So, is Byron trying to make Byron out to be a nice guy after all this?
When I got back, I tried to file a report on what had happened. But nobody wanted to know. So I left. I swore I'd never let innocents be harmed like that again. Swore to find a better way for us. For our people. Without violence. Without preying on our own kind or letting others prey on us.
And I don't see how he didn't keep his promise. What promise? They, like, the whole story doesn't even have anything to do with any kind of promise at all.
Yes. That's right. If he'd flown away and not shot at the ship, then that's not keeping his promise, to, which is, you know, promise to the Psi-Corps to do his duty, whatever.
Right.
So, yeah, I get that. But he didn't. He shot the bloody ships.
He did. He blew it up real good.
Yeah, he's an accomplice.
But he got sad about it. Aww. Yeah. Aww. He was so very sad, and he wanted to write a very strongly worded letter afterwards.
Exactly. I was only following orders.
I was only following orders. It wasn't a broken promise at all. Don't frame me. The Nazis used to follow orders when they killed millions of Jews, and it was all right for them.
Oh, just following orders. Here we go again. The Bloodhound units are still hunting the telepaths, and the telepaths are losing as they are outnumbered. In Medlab, Garibaldi is asking Franklin about neural blocks for blocking out telepathic implants. But just then, the telepaths burst in. Garibaldi takes a few down, and it takes three of them to overpower him. Franklin goes down too easy, and the fight is over. The telepath leader tells them to get the president online, as they now have valuable hostages. Byron and Leeta watch the message from the telepath leader. He outlines their demands. He says they will kill the hostages if their demands are not met. Byron said he does not want people to kill in his name and asks Leeta where the hostages are being kept. She says it looks like Medlab 1 and Byron wants to go there. The telepaths get Peter, the telepath with special kinetic powers, out of Medlab, where he is still being treated from the attack 2 episodes ago. Although he's not in any fit state. He still uses his abilities to throw things at the security detail led by Zack. They fall back, so the telepaths leave Peter to defend the corridor. Lockley has asked for Bester's operation to be shut down by the president and are still waiting for a reply. However, Bester still has jurisdiction, so things will be done his way. This leads Lockley to ask the question to Sheridan. Do they want to negotiate with terrorists? Haven't they been trying to do that over the last couple of episodes? Leeta is trying to find a way to Medlab through the corridors and back passages. Although why Byron isn't doing it as well, I don't know, as he is rated 12 along with Leeta. Yeah. She's going along feeling the thing, saying, no, not here. Goes along a bit further, feels the wall. No, nothing here. He's the same as her, as we find out. So why isn't he doing it as well? No, there's nothing on this side. No. Maybe, yeah, speed up the...
Maybe it's her Vorlon powers. Gives her an extra edge.
Possibly, yes.
Although her eyes don't turn blacky ink, so I don't know.
That's true. Byron arrives at Peter's blockade, and Peter lets him through. Garibaldi tries to get through to the telepaths, saying that killing innocent people will never be a good message. Just then, President Sheridan sends a message to the telepaths. He says they will not bargain with terrorists for the life of hostages. He says they have two choices, surrender, or they will use lethal force to bring them down. He gives them 10 minutes. The terrorist telepath aims his gun at Garibaldi, but is then shot by Byron. Sheridan has been waiting 10 minutes for a reply, He says if Garibaldi has been killed, he might not be able to live with himself. Just then, a response comes from Byron.
Byron, didn't expect to see you there. How did you...
How does it matter? The immediate situation has been resolved. But I need your help to end this. I will arrange to have the hostages released. But in exchange, I want to gather all my people together in down below. Talk to them. Bring this to a peaceful end. That means no interference. If your people or Bester interfere, I won't be able to control them. After we've had some time together, I and those directly responsible for the recent violence will surrender.
Lockley agrees, but they will only surrender if the innocent telepaths will be allowed to leave.
I want your personal guarantee that the rest of my people, those who have harmed no one, will be allowed to leave the station in peace. And we will only surrender to you, not the Psi-Corps. They can't be any part in this, otherwise... Captain, this is the only way to end this without further bloodshed. Those responsible for the violence will surrender, and the innocent will leave. The crisis will be over. And one way or another, we will be gone.
Bester is livid. Lockley tells him that jurisdiction was given to them as the violence was aimed at station personnel. Bester wants the telepaths in his custody, but Lockley says he will have to go through channels. Once again, Bester gets beaten by bureaucracy and red tape. You'll have to go through channels. You have to fill in a piece of paper. Byron is with his people saying goodbye. He kisses Lita and they all have a group hug. Bester is outside the door. He places his palm on the metal and sends a message to Byron. Byron says that Bester doesn't want anyone to know what he did, what they both did. And just then, Lita interrupts him and they leave. Bester is organizing an attack to get Byron. Byron surrenders peacefully, but Bester arrives and things start to get ugly, and a firefight starts. Suddenly, there's a chemical spill and everybody stops firing. Byron says it is now too late to surrender. He tells Lita to walk away, as he asked her to do in a previous episode. Lita cannot save his life, but can save his soul. Lita goes to Sheridan and Lockley as Byron shoots the chemical and kills all the remaining telepaths. So now he's a mass murderer again. Bester is upset that it has ended this way, as telepaths should not fight against each other. They should only fight against mundanes. Franklin is looking for Garibaldi and is concerned about him as he was looking like he was feeling down and asking about neural blocks when they were in Medlab. Sheridan says he hasn't seen him lately. As the telepaths are leaving the station, Lita stops them. She says Byron sent her all his memories and contacts and safe houses. She will contact them one by one to make sure that they get away safe. Garibaldi has done some shopping, a couple of loaves of bread and something that looks suspiciously like alcohol. He pours a glass and drinks it.
That can only lead us to one question. Drunk again, Uncle Mike?
And there it is. We haven't heard that for at least two seasons now.
But you know what we have heard recently? This promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network.
I set him up and Sean boxed him at the park.
Nice.
What if you could bring three experienced producers into your home each week to discuss your favorite movies and the people that made them? That's Tales from Hollywoodland. Your hosts, Arthur, Julian, and Steve, collectively have years of showbiz producing experience. Their weekly show is a fast-paced, fun, and very conversational experience, like spending a good time with your best movie-loving friends and family. Tales from Hollywoodland is available wherever fine podcasts are found. See you at the movies.
And on to the little amount of trivia that we have. Bester states in his briefing that the telepaths have stolen an unknown number of PGs. As they were stolen from a military armory, they should have an inventory on file, and therefore know how many are missing.
So too.
You'd think. Otherwise you wouldn't know any were stolen, would you?
Exactly.
Sean, are there any Star Trek connections?
Nope, not a one.
Oh, thank goodness for that, because I couldn't find any either. And I was thinking, I hope Sean's got some.
Nope, nothing.
Oh, well, there you go. We rattled through that bit. Okay, fine. And ratings. We rate these episodes out of 5 because it's Babylon 5, and IMDb have dropped their rating a little here to 6.9.
Oh, no.
Sean, That's actually lower than last week's.
I can't imagine why.
Well, but yeah, okay, yeah. That, well, it's, you could say it's just as bad, really. The content of the same amount of telepaths, same content of telepaths.
This one had way more telepaths in it, and no Londo and Jakar. So really, because it's the end of the telepath story, I have to give it a 5. But but because it was so god awful to watch, I can really only realistically give it like a 2.25. It was horrible. It was awful. Nothing made sense. You know, you can really tell that JMS was struggling for storylines for season 5 because this telepath thing lasted way too long. Half the stuff that happened in the episodes didn't make any sense. Just like you said in trivia, an unknown amount of weapons. That doesn't make sense. Of course you know how many weapons are in your stored lockers. Like, it's exhausting, you guys. So yeah, I can't even give it like a 2.5. It's bloody awful. So 2.25. And that's it. And I'm so glad it's over. And I never want to remember Byron again.
I mean, I'm just looking at your scores from the last few weeks. You've got one of your top 10 episodes in A View from the Gallery. And then you drop into 3-episode run of the worst episode you've ever seen. So the top into your bottom 5, you've dropped a couple. And then the worst episode ever you've marked, which was Strange Relations. And then last couple of episodes have been not too bad. You know, they've been up around your average, which is around about 3.6 is your average.
Yeah.
And then we drop back into the top 10 again. The top 10? Bottom 10. So, yeah, there's been quite a bad run here. Hopefully things will get better in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, like I warned Dan months ago. Like, you haven't seen season 5, and you're going to be sad that you have.
Yeah, you warned me right at the very beginning of this whole journey, and I wasn't listening. I'm sorry.
Well,
so go on, Dan. What did you think of this episode?
Yeah, I paid for it. Yeah. Oh man, the episode just felt so much longer than it should have been. Like we said, the fact he's got the gun in the hand, everybody knows exactly what he's going to do. And I thought that they were going to do something clever, you know, have Lita freeze time, you know, in a temporal kind of way, kind of like a, you know, everyone out there, all of the death squads, all of Sheridan's men, they were all going to be frozen because they're perceiving it in a different way. And she slows down time. And, you know, remember when all of the telepaths ganged up and they were made themselves invisible so that Bester couldn't see them?
Mm-hmm.
Seasons and seasons ago, I thought they were going to do that again. I thought that they would, like, he would shoot it, make an explosion, but then he kind of like moves them out the way before they actually saw. They think they saw them die in the explosion. Turns out they're just hiding on another ship. And then Lita found some other way of smuggling them out. Or they were holding Franklin hostage. Franklin still knows people who know how to smuggle people out. And they were going to use like a smart way out. It would have meant that Byron survives. And obviously that could mean that he comes back. So I don't like that outcome. But I was expecting something smart. And we didn't get it. And we just got something very dull in its place.
I like that. I like that idea. Because if Byron's aiming the gun at the liquid, he says, right, you know, everybody freeze, I'm going to shoot. And Lita says, you know, he says to Lita, walk away, I've told you to walk away. And she goes, oh my God, oh my God. As she walks away, she makes herself invisible by making everybody in the room not see her, because she's a 12 and she can do that. Turns around, knocks the gun out of his hand.
Dumb. She could do so many things. Like, she's already got all these superpowers.
JMS was so tired of the telepath himself. He's like, I'm not doing anything clever. I just need this part to be over with. I got another 10
Even
episodes.
He was
to go.
Bored of it.
Yeah. That would have been funny because you've seen the guy crucified in the lift and it says Free Byron. If you'd found like a telepath, you know, around the corner somewhere, crucified to a wall with, you know, Byron must die. JMS.
It's just a question of who you listen to. That's all it is. Yeah. And also, like, so now all the telepaths who did survive the explosion, who are now going off and then going off to the safe houses and things, they're following Byron, even though Byron just killed a whole load of their best buddies in a
pretty much pointless exercise, knowing full well they could have hidden themselves using their telepathic powers. So I don't get how he becomes this saintly remember Byron figure thing that they're building up.
Don't try to make sense of it.
If he killed himself, okay, but he killed himself and a bunch of other telepaths. Yeah. It just makes no sense why they would want to follow him.
I mean, he's a total cult. Okay, so it's a cult. Yeah,
yeah. I think three of those letters are still in the word. Yeah. So I'm just going to go for a 2 out of 5. I'm bored at this point. It only gets a 2 because it finally ends the telepath story, and I hope we get something better in whatever they're building up with all these attacks. I suppose Garibaldi turning back to the drink, you know, it's a tragic story and this sort of thing. And again, I wanted more smart solutions, you know, maybe using Jakar's eye to record it or something like that. Yeah, Jakar gets back on the station and they leave the eyeball, watching what's going on or something like that. I'm sure Jakar owes Garibaldi. I wanted a smarter episode. That's why it just gets a 2 out of 5 from me.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. Unfortunately, when I write my notes, I normally write I put my score down then and see whether I'm going to get influenced by you guys. This week I forgot to do that. So I've been trying to remember just how bad this is. And I watched this a couple of weeks ago. So I was trying to get ahead of the game.
It was bad.
And it was bad. I mean, the fact that I can remember the end bit. Mm-hmm. And not much else really, and it's only when I was reading the write up there that I remembered bits of it. But it's a forgettable episode. It is a hooray, they've gone. It's not a good one, but it, as Sean says, it is a good one because hooray, they're dead, they've gone. I'm torn. I mean, do I give it a low one because I hate it? Or it's medium-ish because it's good because they've gone, but no, of course not. It's going down, isn't it? I think I'm going to go with Dan. It's got to be a 2 because it's got to go in the bottom 10. I don't want to watch this one again. I want to skip this in a rewatch. So, there you go. Okay, so I think that's the end of this episode.
I hope so.
let's swiftly move on. Join us again next week when we will be discussing Season 5, Episode 11, The Ragged Edge.
I'm interested, and I think everybody is interested, in the 3 laws of robotics. Could you explain those?
Well, back in 1939, I began writing robot stories. And by the time I'd written 2 and 3, there was a pattern in these stories which John Campbell, the editor of Astounding Science Fiction and my literary father, pointed out to me. He said I was having my robots behave as though they were guided by 3 laws. The first law was that a robot couldn't hurt a human being or, through inaction, allow a human being to come to harm. The second law was that a robot had to obey orders given it by human beings, provided that didn't conflict with the first law. And the third law was that a robot had to protect its own existence, except where that would conflict with the first 2 laws. And after that, I always used them, and the stories evolved out of those 3 laws, out of the mutual contradictions, out of the ambivalences, the incongruities, and so on. And
the interesting thing is that scientists say that when robots are built, that they may be built according to these laws, and also that almost all science fiction writers have adopted them as well in their stories.
That's true about the science fiction writers adopting them. They are not taken for granted. No writer actually quotes them except myself. But the readers are so used to it now that they know it and they take it for granted. And somebody writing in an architectural journal pointed out that these laws hold for tools generally. Number one, a tool must be safe to use. And 2, provided it is safe to use, it's got to do what you want it to do. And 3, provided it is safe to use and it does what you want to, it's got to last.
But could your 3 laws of robotics be overloaded on the side of humanism? There are those who believe that the machines we create are going to be Frankensteins.
Well, of course, the 3 laws of robotics were originally invented by me in order to avoid the Frankenstein motive, because before I wrote my stories, most robot stories were filled with this Frankenstein bit about the robot destroying its creator. There are some things that men were not meant to know. However, having worked with the three laws for now for 35 years, practically, I was asked to write a robot story to end all robot stories. So I wrote one in which robots became so intelligent that by any reasonable definition, they defined themselves as human beings, you see. So that now the three laws of robotics became the three laws of humanics. And we were right back to the Frankenstein motif. I received letters from readers saying, does this mean you're never going to write any more robot stories? And I wrote back saying, don't worry, if I think of a good robot story, I'll write it anyway.
If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. Three spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon 3.
Well, if you have any other problems, any other questions at all, just ask.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.